Tom, dearest husband, I am very concerned about you.
My heart is broken, Mrs. Proudie. That is the trouble. My heart is broken. And you are the cause.
Grace. Dearest Grace.
You are very good. Very kind.
So I have not done wrong, then, in coming here?
No. You have not done wrong. But I fear you do no good.
Well, I can talk with you. Look at you.
But you won't persuade me.
Will I not, dearest Grace?
Nothing has changed since last we spoke. Papa is still accused, still despised.
But in a few weeks he'll have the trial, and he'll be acquitted.
Well, Major Grantly, he may. But even if he is, for many people he will be guilty nonetheless. And whether he is innocent or not, I will still be his daughter. The daughter of a very poor and very lowly man. And I will bring nothing but shame upon your family.
No!
You are good. You are kind. But you waste your effort in coming here. It is all in vain.
Lady Lufton, I believe that Mr. Crawley's daughter is staying at the parsonage.
You are correct, and enjoying her stay there, as far as I can tell. You told me before, of course, that in your view, the Crawley family should be left alone till after the trial. But I told you, Dr. Grantly, that I disagreed with you, that they needed what help and support we could give them.
Yes, well, be that as it may, I have also heard, Lady Lufton, that my son has come to Framley.
He has come and he has gone. Stayed with us a mere 2 days, I'm afraid. Went home this morning.
And while he was here, did he and Miss Crawley see each other?
Well, not at Framley Court, at least. But he went over to the parsonage, I think.
Yes, I am sure he did, Lady Lufton. He is in love with Miss Crawley. He's making a fool of himself over her.
Do you mean he wishes to marry her?
He does.
I see. Dr. Grantly, you must believe me when I tell you that I knew nothing about this. Had no notion of it.
Well, I do believe you, Lady Lufton.
Of course, Miss Crawley is a very pretty girl. More than pretty. Downright handsome. Or will be, when she fills out a little. I suspected she might cause havoc sooner or later, but I hadn't realized that she'd already begun.
Oh, yes. She's causing havoc, most certainly, Lady Lufton. Such a marriage as this, as I'm sure you'll agree, would be a grave misfortune. Therefore, I have set my face firmly against it.
If they are both resolved, Archdeacon, I cannot see what can be done to prevent them.
Well, nor can I, to be honest. If he is determined to ruin my life, and his mother's, and his sister's, then I can do nothing. He must have his way and ruin his own life, too.
But why should he be ruined, Dr. Grantly?
Oh, they'll have enough to survive on, I suppose. He says he'll sell Cosby Lodge and go and live somewhere in France, or Spain, someplace called Pau. But he shall have no money from me. I shall withdraw his allowance, and I shall alter my will.
I am sorry that you're intending to do that.
Sorry? Well, I'm sorry, too. I'm more than sorry. I love the boy as you love yours.
Yes, I am sure. And let me tell you, Dr. Grantly, when Ludovic chose dear, sweet Lucy to be his wife, I was against the match at first, because I did not know her. I opposed my son, said that Lucy was not worthy of him. But I was wrong. Very wrong.
Lucy's father was not a thief. You were not disgraced by her.
Indeed, I was not. Far from it. Neither, though, do I believe that Mr. Crawley is a thief, or that the girl has done anything to forfeit your respect. Tell me, is Henry engaged to Miss Crawley?
He says that she has refused him, though, of course, that means nothing. It's mere ritual. A girl in her circumstances mustn't grab at a prize when it's first offered, you know. But anyway, my anger is not with her.
I do not see how it can be. With her, indeed. Or your son.
Oh, by the way, Crosby, I saw Lily Dale last night. You saw her? Where?
At Ointment Hall, Mrs. Thorne's place. I told you I was dining there.
Yes, Pratt. You did.
Well, Miss Dale is staying at the house while she's in town. Her cousin Bernard.
Yes, yes. And did you speak with her?
A little. The conversation was somewhat strained. She recognized me from when she was riding in the park.
Of course.
A nice girl, to be certain.
Nice. She is a treasure. She is the dearest, sweetest girl I have ever known. Or am ever likely to know.
Well, perhaps she is. But in my view, it would be much better that you and she should be as strangers.
I can't agree. Did she talk of me at all?
She didn't. As I say, we spoke but a short while. You should forget about her, Crosby.
No. Impossible.
Even if she were to permit a renewal of acquaintance, what good would come of it?
I might make her my wife.
And after all that has passed, would you be happy with her? Would she be happy with you? I doubt it. Oh, women delight to forgive injuries, I know. They like the excitement of generosity. But Miss Dale, I think, has been injured too much. And as for you, how could you ever tell her of your love without also talking of your shame?
Lady Lufton, my son might have had all that he wanted from me in the way of money. I would have done anything for him, believe me, but a father does feel that he should have some return for his generosity, and in this matter I have not received it. Henry was under no delusion. He knew that a bride from such a family as the Crawleys, and from such a wretched place as Hogglestock, would not be welcomed among us. He knew it, but he didn't care. You may say that he has the power to do what he likes, and he does, but I have the power to do what I like, and I intend to do it.
But to withdraw from him all assistance, it is a terrible thing, Dr. Grantly.
Not as terrible, I think, as what he will do to me.
You are so warm-hearted by nature. I cannot believe you will keep to your plan.
Well, I will try.
Dr. Grantly, I have great sympathy with you. In your situation, no doubt, I would feel much as you feel. But I tell you what I would do. I would see the young lady in question, and I would talk the matter over with her.
Would you indeed? Do you know, Lady Lufton, that notion had never entered my head. Talk to her, yes. I will do as you advise, and I will do it at once.
Good. But you will be gentle with her, will you not?
Gentle?
It is not her you are angry with, remember?
One more sitting, I suppose, and the painting will be finished.
Yes, one more should do it.
And after that, Conway, it will all be finished, will it not? It will all be over.
Sorry, I don't understand.
No, of course you don't. You look at it in another light. For you, everything is beginning anew. Clara Van Siever is to become your wife.
Well, if she is, then it is at your urging. Or so I thought.
Yes, Conway, yes. It is. Have you asked her yet?
I have not. It is not easy, you know, when I am supposed to be getting on with the picture, and when she and I are left alone so little.
That is nonsense. To have left you longer would have been an impropriety. Marry her, Conway. Marry her, you must.
Well, if I must, then I shall. For you, Maria, I would make any sacrifice.
Oh, no, I think not. The sacrifice, sir, is all mine. Believe me. You shall give up nothing. And you shall have everything you desire, love, happiness, wealth, status. And you shall have friendship too, sir, if you would accept it from one so wretched, so feeble as myself.
Oh, Maria.
Oh, forgive me. My mind is distracted, my heart is pierced, but I shall not flinch from my duty. Oh, Conway, be a good husband to her, rule her, care for her. Do not leave her alone as I have been left alone. Do not let her feed on her own thoughts as I have fed on mine. Above all, love her. Cleave to her, make her flesh of your flesh. Now, go.
Miss Crawley, my son has informed me that he has professed an attachment to you.
He has been very good to me.
Well, I don't know about being good, though I'm sure that he means to be, most of the time. Miss Crawley, I will speak to you very openly, but in a gentle and kindly fashion also. I would not wish to say a word that would hurt your feelings, but you must realize that there are reasons why, if you were to marry my son, it would do great injury to him and to others. Miss Crawley, your father...
is accused of stealing money. Yes. Also, we are so very poor. Now, if indeed he had stolen the money, I know that I ought never to be your son's wife, or anybody's wife. I know that very well. But I also know that Papa did not steal the money. I'm certain of it. And as to our being poor, I don't think it signifies at all. Papa is a gentleman and a clergyman. There is no shame in being poor. If it had been only that, I would have agreed to Major Grantley's proposal, agreed at once, because I love him.
If you love him, you will not wish to injure him.
Well, sir, as long as people believe that Papa stole that money, I will not marry your son. I love him, and therefore I will not injure him. I promise.
My dear, what you say does you very much honour indeed. Give me your hand. You are a good girl, a dear, sweet good girl, and when the cloud that hangs over your father has disappeared, as I am certain it will, you shall come to us, my dear. You shall come to us, and shall be our daughter.
Madalena?
Yes, Mama?
That young friend you met when we were at the Broughtons.
Do you mean Mr. Eames, Mama?
Yes. You haven't seen very much of him recently.
No, Mama. Mr. Eames has gone abroad.
Oh, but he will be back, will he?
Yes, Mama.
Did you say that he has money, Madalena?
I believe I may have done, Mama.
Yes, oh, a fine young man, I'm sure. Does he like you?
Yes, he does.
Good.
But there is another he likes.
Oh? Who?
You would not know her, Mama. Her name is Miss Lily Dale, and she lives in the country. Mr. Eames's artist friend, Mr. Dalrymple, he mentioned her to me.
Did he? By the way, Madalena, I think Mr. Dalrymple should paint your picture some day.
No, Mama, I should not like my picture painted by a man who has painted Miss Clara Van Siever.
Miss Clara Van Siever?
She has been sitting for him in secret.
In secret? Where?
In Mrs. Broughton's house. Oh. How I hate and despise that woman.
Well, which woman?
Miss Van Siever, of course. As for Mrs. Broughton, she is an object of pity.
And what of this girl who lives in the country who's liked by Miss Dreams?
Of her, Mama, I know very little, except that she has recently travelled up from the country and is staying in town.
Well, no doubt this country girl has heard of your friendship with Mr. Eames and has decided she must make him her own as soon as he returns. Well, she's a cunning creature, that's clear.
Perhaps, Mama. But I can be cunning, too.
Did you not see Henry there?
No, my dear, he had gone, but I did see Miss Crawley. Susan, she is a fine, fine girl.
Oh, you think so?
I do, and I have promised her that if her father is acquitted, I shall withdraw my opposition to the marriage.
Archdeacon!
Believe me, you would have done the same had you been there.
I very much doubt it, Archdeacon. I am not quite so impulsive as you are.
Oh, but, my dear, you could not have helped yourself. You would have been overcome by her gentility, her bearing and good manners, her beauty.
Ah, she is beautiful, then.
She is, Susan. Not in the common, ordinary way, you know, but with the kind of noble beauty that comes from breeding. Why on earth did Henry not think to tell us? Good heavens, if we had been made aware of her special qualities, things would have been different, would they not?
I cannot say, Archdeacon. But she must be a wonderful young woman to have succeeded both with the son and the father. A paragon, I think.
Emily, I have received a letter.
Oh, yes? From whom?
I do not know from whom. She signs herself M.D.
M.D.? My aunt was once M.D. Martha Dunstable, you know, before she married Dr. Thorne.
I hardly think it is from your aunt. Here, read.
A lady presents her compliments to Miss L.D. and earnestly implores Miss L.D. Does the lady not know your name?
Of course she knows it. She wrote it on the envelope.
Then why all this Miss L.D. business?
Because the lady who calls herself M.D. thinks there is excitement to be got from putting names into initials.
The lady is a fool.
I agree.
And earnestly implores Miss L.D. to answer the following question. Is Miss L.D. engaged to marry Mr. J.E.? Ah, now, J.E., of course, is John Eames.
Of course.
In order that L.D. may not doubt that M.D. has an interest in J.E., M.D. encloses the last note that she received from him before he started for the continent. Where is the note?
I have torn it up.
Dearest L.D., that's a pity. Was it a very interesting note that J.E. sent to M.D.?
Emily, I did not show you the letter so that you could joke about it.
But heavens, I have to joke about it. And I assure you, Lily, that if I received such a letter about Bernard, I'd find it even funnier.
Well, that would be different. You and Bernard understand each other.
And so will you and J.E. someday.
No, dearest Emily, no more at least than we do now. Well, Mr. Eames, of course, can choose his acquaintances as he likes. But I wish this woman was not among them. Someone who can send me a letter like that is no fit friend for a gentleman. And if he must be friendly with her, I wish he wouldn't tell her my name. Oh, Emily, I know it is a stupid letter.
Very stupid.
But it is also very disagreeable. She means me to understand that she has a claim upon Johnny, and that I stand in her way. But I stand in nobody's way. John Eames has a right to give his hand to whomsoever he pleases. And I have a right to be left alone.
Conway. Oh, Conway.
Mrs. Broughton. Maria, is anything the matter?
Oh, my husband.
Why? What's happened? What's wrong?
Everything. He is ruined.
Heaven and earth, what do you mean?
You must not say a word of this to anyone. No, Conway, do not take my hand. He is ruined. Utterly.
Has he told you so himself?
No. No, I heard it from Clara's mother. And very harsh and cruel she was, too. Said all manner of things about Dobbs. How can I help it if he drinks? I have not encouraged him. And as for our mode of living and how much we could afford to spend... Well, I am as ignorant as a child, you know I am.
Yes.
And now she says that Dobbs owes her money and can't pay, and that Musselburgh must have the business and Dobbs must shift for himself elsewhere.
And does Mrs. Van Siever have the power to make this change?
How am I to know? I know nothing. But Conway, he didn't come home last night.
Not at all.
No. He sent for his things, left a message that he had to stay in the city. Oh, Conway, what am I to do if they come and sell the furniture and take the house and turn me out into the street?
I'm terribly sorry.
If only I had met you first, if only I had... Oh, dear, there is something else that Mrs. Van Siever told me.
Yes?
She said that Clara is to marry Musselburgh.
Did she indeed? And what is Clara's opinion of this matter?
Her mother didn't say.
Clara is the sort of girl to have an opinion on such a matter, I think.
Yes, I think so too.
There was to be one last sitting for the picture.
Yes, tomorrow.
Perhaps, in view of everything, we should cancel the arrangement. I'll send for the canvas and all my stuff.
No, Conway. Of course, I may have been turned out into the street by then. But assuming I am still in residence... You will have this room as you have been promised you would.
and there will be one last sitting.
In recent weeks, I have thought much about Johnny Eames. Thought more about him, perhaps, than I have ever done before. Which is in part because of the business concerning Mr. Crawley, and the fact that Johnny, to help Mr. Crawley's cause, has gone abroad to find the Arabins. And that, it seems to me, was a great kindness, a fine, noble thing to do. So that I am encouraged to regard him not as I always remembered him, an awkward, callow youth, a mere clerk, a mere friend, but rather as someone who is worthy of esteem. And more besides, perhaps. And then again, when I saw Adolphus Crosby in the park, and he was so greatly altered, was no longer an Apollo, well, I suppose Johnny, who had always suffered in comparison, began to benefit by it. But what am I to make of John Eames now? Despite Emily, I cannot laugh at M.D.'s letter, nor at the note which J.E. wrote to her. Oh, John, whoever that woman is, she is coarse, she is impudent, and I pray that you will have nothing more to do with her.
Do you like paintings, Lily?
Well, I like some paintings. It very much depends.
Does it? I don't think I like paintings very much at all. I certainly don't like any of these. You see, I'm a perfect Philistine, as my dear husband so often reminds me.
Aunt, look. Lady Glencora Palliser.
What? Oh, no, no, that is not her. And to say it is, my dear, is something of a slight upon her ladyship.
I meant the picture. There.
Oh! Oh! Well, that is a slight upon her also. What is she doing with that handkerchief?
I think she is about to drop it, Mrs. Thorne. She is being portrayed as Desdemona, the wife of Othello, you know.
It's by Conway Dalrymple. He likes to dress his portraits up, as it were.
Does he indeed? Well, I shall not go to him to have my likeness done.
Emily.
He'd have me as a witch in Macbeth, no doubt.
Emily.
Or the Merchant of Venice.
Yes, Lily, I have seen him.
Oh, there's Fowler Pratt. In person, I mean, not in oils.
Aunt.
But I don't know the fellow with him, Mr. Pratt.
Mrs. Thorne.
Aunt, please.
How nice to see you.
Now, you dined with me 2 weeks ago, Mr. Pratt, and you've not called since. Now, I call that bad form.
It is. I'm surprised I'm still thought fit to talk to. Miss Dunstable, Miss Dale.
And who, pray, is your friend?
My name is Adolphus Crosby.
Crosby.
I am known to Miss Dale. Miss Dale, I am very pleased, indeed. I am delighted to speak to you once again, after all this time. I hope you are well.
Yes, thank you. I am well.
I am glad of it. Indeed, I am.
You must forgive me. I had no idea of the identity of Mr. Pratt's friend.
He should not have come over to us.
He should not. He should have left the gallery at once.
Well, I did not expect him to vanish.
He should have vanished. He was bound in honour to do so. Even when Othello has done nothing wrong, when the fault, if there is one, rests with the woman, she has a right to expect that he make himself scarce. But when the sin has been all the man's, as it was in this case, and such a damning sin, too.
Yes,
He ought to hang himself for what he's done today.
Pray, Mrs. Thorne, do not go on.
I shall say nothing more about it, I promise you. But, Lily, my dear, I find it so very hard to understand you. That man is so clearly a brute, and always was so, and yet...
Mrs. Thorne, you promised you would not talk of him.
After this, I will not, but, you see, I just cannot conceive why the memory of him should be allowed to wreck your whole life.
My life is not wrecked. It is a very happy life.
But if all that I hear is true, there is a most estimable young man whom everybody likes and whom you like very much yourself and who is constant as the Northern Star, and yet you offer him no hope. And all because of this appalling creature we had to endure just now.
Mrs. Thorne, it is impossible to explain it all.
Oh, I've no wish that you should explain it, nor would I wish you to marry a man you don't love. But I wouldn't want you to fail to marry, and marry happily, simply for the sake of an unhappy memory of an unpleasant man. There is nothing so destructive, you know, as morbid sentiment. And now, my dear, I will say no more.
the hand an inch or two further back, Miss Van Siever, if you don't mind. That's it.
My husband has not been home for 2 days. Whether he is indeed ruined, as Clara's mother claims, or whether that's a vile rumour she has started, I have no notion. None at all. But one way or another, things are coming to an end. Today is Clara Van Siever's last sitting. The last time Conway will use this room as his studio.
Look down a little.
Is that enough?
Yes. Good.
Of course, the painting is not completed. The figure of the man who sleeps and is killed requires much work yet. But this afternoon, when the session is finished, Conway will take his paints and his canvas and will say goodbye. And I will have lost him. Perhaps forever. No, no, impossible. I'll not let him go.
You have never told us, Mr. Dalrymple, whose face you will use for Captain Sisera.
No, I never have. Perhaps I shall put in my own, if you don't object.
No, not in the least.
The idea of striking a nail through his head appeals to you, does it, Clara?
Oh, his head will do as well as another's.
No!
It will seem like my revenge for all the time I've spent being painted.
I think, Miss Van Siever, that you've had your revenge already. But you struck me in the heart, not the head.
Oh, what a very pretty speech. Do you not think so, Clara?
I do. I'll make a curtsy when I've finished here.
And there's no need. It was not intended to be pretty. It was simply an expression of the truth. Mrs. Broughton?
Yes, Mr. Dalrymple?
I hope you will forgive me, but I find your presence this morning something of a distraction.
Oh, that is a shame. As it is Clara's last sitting, I thought I would not miss any of it.
I see.
Conway, what are you doing?
I'm stopping work. I'm going to ask Clara a question. Clara Van Siever, will you be my wife?
Mr. Dalrymple...
Well?
Clara!
Mamma! Mrs. Van Siever! This is a surprise, Mamma!
An unpleasant one, I trust. Clara, why are you dressed like Mad Bess of Bedlam? Silly, foolish girl! Take off that ridiculous turban!
Mamma!
Take it off!
Madam, you might have gone through the ceremony of being announced by the servant.
I might, but I didn't. By the way, Mrs. Broughton, not only is your husband ruined, but he was drunk last night. Oh, yes, blind drunk.
Mrs. Van Siever.
And no doubt he is blind drunk again today.
Oh, can we catch her?
Madam, you should not have spoken to her in that fashion, in front of others.
I'll be the judge of that, thank you, sir.
Lay her on the sofa.
I dare say you think me very hard because I speak plainly. But I tell you plainly now, there are things a great deal harder than plain speaking. How much do you expect to be paid for this picture?
I don't expect to be paid for it at all.
And who is it to belong to?
I don't know. It belongs to me at present.
Then it must belong to you no longer. I won't have my girl being made a show of. Tell me what it costs, and I'll pay you, and give the painting the treatment it deserves.
No, madam, I'll not sell it. But if you wish, it shall be destroyed.
Oh, that is certainly what I wish. Though I won't trust the job to you. If the painting is not sent to my house at once, you'll be hearing from my lawyers.
Oh, there's no need for that, madam.
Conway! Oh, Conway!
No, there's no need at all. There, Mrs. Van Siever. You can take the bits home in your basket.
No!
Oh, very fine, Mrs. Broughton. Very fine indeed, yes. When ladies faint, they find it best not to lose consciousness entirely.
Take her away, Conway. For God's sake, take her away.
I shall take myself away very shortly, so you needn't trouble Mr. Conway about that. Though, while we're at it... I thought the gentleman was Mr. Something else. I suppose, sir, to be called by your Christian name, you must be a brother of Mrs. Broughton or something of that sort.
Take her away!
Wait a moment, madam. Sir, my daughter, I think, is more to blame in this matter than anyone.
She is not to blame at all.
Well, that's for me to judge. And as you've been to some trouble with the picture and have now chopped it up... I don't mind paying you for your time and your paints. Will £10 do it, sir?
The price is 750.
750?
But I would strongly advise against the purchase.
I shall certainly not give you 750.
Yes, you could invest your money more wisely, I'm sure. But if the painting is to be sold at all, that is my price.
And I'm not paying it. If, however, you wish to send a bill for your work, send it, please, to Mr. Musselburgh. He is my man of business, my sole man of business, and head of the firm in place of Mr. Dobbs Broughton.
Oh,
and Mrs. Broughton, if you are fully conscious once more, it may interest you to learn that Mr. Musselburgh is to marry my daughter.
No, Mama.
Now, Clara. The cab is at the door, and it's costing 2 shillings an hour.
Mrs. Broughton, Mr. Dalrymple, Mama has not the slightest right to say that I am to marry Mr. Musselburgh. Nothing in the world would induce me to do so.
Well, I cannot compel you, of course. If you choose to marry the sweep at the crossing, I can't stop you. But it won't help the sweep very much, and it won't help you. Come, girl.
Oh, God.
Maria. There, there.
Mr. Crawley, I fear you have made an error. You were asked to appear before the Commission of Inquiry on Monday.
Yes, yes, I understood as much, but I shall not come here on Monday.
You will not?
No, Dr. Tempest, nor will there be any need for you to prolong your investigation. You see, I intend to resign from the curacy of the parish of Hogglestock.
Resign, Mr. Crawley? Oh, no, no, I do not think you should do that.
But I shall, nevertheless.
Mr. Crawley, you have not yet been tried in court, and from all that I hear, you have a strong chance of being acquitted.
My decision has nothing to do with the possible outcome of the trial, nothing either with what the inquiry might have concluded. It has nothing to do with my guilt or innocence. Indeed, I myself cannot tell you if I stole the money, because simply I do not know.
That is as I thought. In which case, you did not steal it. There can be no doubt about that.
Oh, I thank you for saying so. I thank you heartily. But your words cannot cleanse me of the stain of disgrace, Dr. Tempest. When the bishop first expressed his opinion, or rather, when his wife did, when he sent Mr. Thumble to inform me that I was to resign the curacy of Hogglestock, I ventured to make a stand. For neither the opinion itself, nor the manner of its being given, commanded my respect, but there are other opinions. There are other people who think that I am guilty. There are people who, in a kindly fashion, are disposed to think I'm almost innocent, but who know in their hearts that I'm guilty enough to deserve punishment. Oh. The truth is, Dr. Tempest, that whether the jury find me guilty or not, and I think they will, there will be shame, heaped upon shame. There will be such infamy as I do not think is fitting for a representative of God's church. Therefore, I wish to resign the curacy and would ask you to convey as much to the bishop.
No, Mr. Crawley, I will not do that.
Then I will do it myself.
Mr. Crawley, think of your wife, your family.
I do think of them, and pray for them.
If you are found innocent, then you will have consigned them to the workhouse on account of your own excessive sensitivity.
No, Dr. Tempest, on account of my sense of duty. But believe me, that my family should suffer on my account is almost impossible for me to bear. But my duty as a clergyman is above everything. Whatever may befall, I must not, dare not, remain curate of the parish of Hogglestock.
Oh, Conway, what am I to do?
I don't know.
Do you think my husband is ruined?
I don't know that either. There may be some truth in it, I suppose. If you wish, Maria, I shall go into the city and make inquiries.
What do you mean to do about Clara?
Well, I mean to marry her, despite the odious mother.
If you do, she'll get no money.
It makes no difference. I intend to marry her, so I'll ask her again and hope for no interruption. You want me to marry her, don't you?
I don't know. My mind's too confused. I don't know what I want. Oh, Conway. Conway,
Heavens, it must be Dobbs. If he's drunk and he finds you...
Oh, he'll find me, Maria. I've no reason to hide. Broughton?
Stay here.
Broughton? Is that you?
No, it's Musselburgh. I thought I'd find you here. Mrs. Broughton's in, I take it.
Yes, what's wrong, Musselburgh? What's happened? Is it about Dobbs?
Yes.
Well, if you've come to tell her he's clean ruined, she knows.
I'm afraid it's worse than that.
Worse? What do you mean?
He blew his brains out this morning.
My dear.
Yes?
Regarding Mr. Crawley's letter of resignation.
Yes?
What do you propose to do about it?
Do about it, Mrs. Proudie? I don't know.
But something must be done, surely. It is a letter that requires to be acted upon at once. We cannot doubt that the miscreant is doing right at last, but his submission will be of no avail unless you take some action. Do you not think, perhaps, that Mr. Thumble should go over to Hogglestock?
No.
No?
I think Mr. Thumble should stay where he is.
Then what is to be done?
Never mind what is to be done.
But, Bishop, that is absurd. Bishop, I wish you would not look away. Turn round and speak to me properly.
But I have no wish to speak to you at all.
Bishop, my dear, this will not do, you know. You are forgetting yourself.
I wish I could.
It is impossible for you to perform your duty in the diocese if you continue to sit there doing nothing. You must rally, Bishop. You must get to your work like a man.
Please, go away.
No, Bishop, I will not go away. While you are in this sad condition, while you are unable to perform your duty, I must do mine. I must stay by you.
But it was you that brought me to this condition.
No, sir. That is not true.
Oh, believe me, it is. You have inflicted upon me such disgrace that I cannot hold up my head. You have laid me low. You have ruined me.
Those are sinful words. They are indeed. And I will not hear them from you. All I wish is to awake you from this torpor into which you have sunk, so that you may do what is required of you.
I would do it, and do it well, if you were not here.
Not here? Oh. So you wish me dead, is that it? I tell you this, my lord. If you are become imbecile, then I must take your place and perform your tasks. Of course, I find it very sad that I should have to assume your authority.
I will not allow you to do so.
But I must. I must. Things cannot go on as they are.
Miss Crawley pledged that she would not marry you while any suspicion rested upon her father's name. And your father is more than satisfied with that.
Mother.
Indeed. He is more than satisfied with Miss Crawley altogether.
He had no right to exact such a pledge.
No, he did not exact it, Henry. Miss Crawley made it of her own accord.
But he had no right to go to her to discuss the matter with her.
Oh, Henry, you are being so very difficult, you know. Your father has agreed to the marriage.
With a condition attached.
Indeed. But if Mr. Crawley is acquitted, as we hope he will be, your father will be only too happy to welcome Miss Crawley into the family, and to have an excuse for making a fuss of her.
And if Grace's father is not acquitted...
Then you would not marry with his blessing. But I do not think he would let you suffer financially.
He has not told me so himself.
No, Henry, he has not.
Then my house shall remain on the market. No, I shall assume that I shall be obliged to sell up, and that Grace and I shall start our married life in France.
Oh, Henry, Henry! You are so awkward, so obstinate, so cross-grained. Oh, you are so much like your father.
A great step must be taken. This I have known for some while, since at least that terrible occasion with Dr. Tempest. A great step must be taken, and now I have decided what it must be. I will resign the bishopric. Yes, I will resign it. Oh, there will be disgrace. Of course there will, but no worse, I think, than what I suffer at present. And such a measure, you see, will confer punishment where punishment is due. Upon her, I mean, who has done such injury to me for so many years. Yes, let her be punished. Let her be stripped of her income, her palace, her position. Let her cry out in agony and despair, and let her repent the evil she has done me.
My dear? My dear, I have arranged it all with Mr. Thumble.
You have done what?
I have instructed Mr. Thumble to go to Hogglestock and speak to Mr. Crawley.
No.
Concerning the taking over of Mr. Crawley's duties.
No.
But I have, my dear. I've told him he can ride the bay, the old one, I mean.
No. No.
But, my dear, there was no alternative. I came to you for instructions, but you gave me none.
I would have given what instructions I pleased in proper time, and I give instruction now. Mr. Thumble shall not go to Hogglestock.
But what about next Sunday?
He shall not go next Sunday either.
Then who shall? Who is to take over from Mr. Crawley?
No one.
No one?
It does not matter who. It is not your business. Excuse me.
Where are you going?
To find Thumble, if I can. And after that, Mrs. Proudie, I shall return here and shall write a letter of resignation to the Archbishop.
What? What?
Goodbye.
He'll not do that. He'll not write that letter. I won't allow him. I'll talk to him. Persuade him not to resign. I have always endeavoured to be a good Christian. I have always aimed to help my Lord the Bishop, to be a strong support in times of need. I have worked hard, been faithful, used my skills in his service, and yet it seems that I have failed. It seems that my Christianity is such that no one likes me for it. Not even my own husband. It seems that though I have always loved him, dear Tom, though I have tried to be a model wife, he does not love me in return, hates me in truth. Finds my help, my support, my work on his behalf so detestable that he is prepared to give up his high office and seek obscurity. Oh, Tom. Dear Tom, I did what I thought was right, what I thought was best. What, therefore, must I do now? What must I... Help me! Help!
I'm accused of stealing a cheque for £20. I must, I suppose, be guilty of the charge, for I cannot say how the cheque came into my possession. I had thought, perhaps, that it had been given me by the Dean, Mr. Arabin, but this he has categorically denied. The truth is, my mind is going, which may account for my taking the cheque and certainly explains why I cannot remember doing so. I am a thief, and am generally regarded as such. And for this reason, I have decided to resign the curacy of Hogglestock. All is lost, all is given up, and there is nothing left for me now but to cast myself and my family upon the mercy of God. Mr. Thumble, by resigning my position, I also relinquished any influence in the question of who is to stand in for me. The bishop, that is, the bishop's wife, has chosen you, Mr. Thumble, and to you, therefore, with deepest regret, I hand over my duties.
And you promise that you will not interfere in the care of the parish?
I have said so. I will not interfere.
I am much obliged to you. There is one other thing, Mr. Crawley. You don't have a horse, by any chance?
You work in the parish, you mean?
For my work, I will need one, certainly.
For my work, Mr. Thumble, I always go on foot.
Ah, yes. But anyway, I meant more immediately, to get me back to Barchester.
I have no horse, you do.
Well, in truth, it belongs to the bishop, Mr. Crawley. And although Mrs. Proudie insisted that it would be more than sufficient, it is not in good condition. It had a fall on Spigglewick Hill, and I was thrown to the ground. And look, look, my clothing is damaged, and... Now then, who is this?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Crawley, you probably do not remember me. My name is Major Grantley.
Sir, I do remember you. I'm under no common obligation to you, Major Grantley. You are one of my bailsmen.
Oh, there's no need to mention that. Mr. Crawley, my reason for coming...
Major Grantley, you must be the Archdeacon's son.
I am. Mr. Crawley...
I hope your respected father is well, sir.
What? Oh, pretty well.
I am so pleased. Might I also ask... Oh, my name is Thumble, sir. I am the Bishop of Barchester's special envoy. Might I ask if, when you have finished your business here, you could give me some assistance in getting back to Barchester?
No, sir, I could not. I am returning to Silverbridge.
Ah. In that case, perhaps I might accompany you to Silverbridge and catch the train from there.
But what about that horse of yours? It's not to be left here, you know.
Well, Major Grantley could instruct a servant.
No, sir, Major Grantley could not. The request is most unreasonable.
Oh, well, that's as Major Grantley pleases to look at it.
It seems to me, Mr. Thumble, that you will be obliged to walk back to Barchester along with your horse. Now, Major Grantley, come in.
Thank you.
Good day to you, Mr. Thumble, and a pleasant journey.
Ah.
Here is Mrs. Proudie. Here she is in my own study. But she makes no noise. Mrs. Proudie is silent. Forever. I shall never hear that voice again. Never again shall she march uncalled for into this room. Never again shall she harangue me, or make decisions for me, or contradict me in the presence of those who should be under my authority. I am free. Free of tyranny and fear, for there is no one else of whom I am afraid. I am now my own master. But I must remember also, certainly, that her death is a cause of much grief. In some ways, at certain periods of my life, she was very good to me. Without her, no doubt, I would never have become Bishop of Barchester. Oh, God! Let me not be glad that she is dead. Oh, but at the same time, thank you, God, for you sent the thorn, and you have taken it away.
You are giving up the curacy?
I am.
I'm sorry to hear it.
So was I, Major Grantley. For it seems to me that we were in sufficient jeopardy before, but now...
Yes, Mary, but this is a matter with which we need not trouble our visitor. He did not, I assume, come here to talk of the curacy of Hogglestock.
No. No, in truth, I didn't. Mr. Crawley, Mrs. Crawley, I do not know how far you are aware that, for some time, I have been acquainted with your daughter, Grace.
Oh, we have known a while... Have we not, Josiah? She mentioned it to me several months ago.
Good. I suppose, then, that I may as well make a clean breast of it and tell you outright that I have come here to ask permission to make her my wife. May I hope that neither of you disapproves?
Sir.
Yes, Mr. Crawley.
Sir, I am at present so disadvantaged by untoward circumstances that I can hardly claim to have proper authority over my daughter.
Oh, my dear, do not say that.
But I do say it. I'm without the power of earning bread. Within a matter of weeks, I may be found guilty of theft and be consigned to prison. On account of this, I deserve neither obedience nor respect from any member of my family.
Oh, Josiah, that is not true.
Moreover, my situation being what it is, I cannot, as Grace's father and as a gentleman, encourage any man to ask for a hand in marriage.
But, sir, I have made up my mind about all that.
And I, sir, have made up my mind.
No, Josiah, please.
Major Grantly, my daughter is the sweetest and fairest girl in Barsetshire.
Yes, she is.
She is as pure as the light of day, except that she's stained by my impurity, by my humiliation and shame. If it were not for that, she'd be fit to adorn the house of the best gentleman in England.
She shall adorn mine. By God, she shall! Tomorrow, if she'll have me.
Oh, Major Grantly.
There is no impurity, no shame. I tell you, Mr. Crawley, I shall be proud to be connected to you.
Sir, you are generous in your prosperity, but I cannot countenance such a match. And I tell you, sir, even if I could, even if I bade my daughter marry you, she would not do it. Not while this great disgrace is upon me.
Oh, good heavens! Good heavens! Susan, who do you suppose is dead?
I can't guess, but I hope it is not someone dear to me.
No, no, Susan, she was never that, but it's true. She's dead. Quite dead. Good heavens, I wonder how he felt when he discovered her.
Archdeacon!
He'd be shocked, of course. Any man would be shocked.
Archdeacon, who has died?
But at the same time, Mrs. Proudie.
Mrs. Proudie?
Dead! Dead. But at the same time, he must have thought, what a relief.
Archdeacon, if Mrs. Proudie indeed is dead...
She is dead.
You should not be speaking in that fashion.
I cannot speak in any other fashion. You may be quite sure that if any man had such a wife as she was, he would be glad to get rid of her.
Gracious Archdeacon!
You will regret her passing, you know. I regret it least of all.
Archdeacon, please control your tongue.
She's dead. And I, for one, will take every chance of speaking ill of her.
Mrs. Proudie? Dead?
Yes, Lady Lufton, of a heart attack.
Well, what will he do without her?
The same as other men do, I suppose.
But Mr. Robarts, he's not the same as other men, and she was not the same as other women.
She was a virago. She was a tyrant.
Yes, she was. May God forgive her all her sins. But she was useful to the bishop, nonetheless. At least I've always supposed she was. And now...
Dead? Mrs. Proudie. Dead. I never liked the woman much, it is true. She derided my work with the cathedral choir, made every effort to ensure that the wardenship of Hiram's hospital did not come my way a second time. Generally despised me, and quite openly, too. But she was a pious woman, I think. And the poor bishop has lost his life's companion. Mrs. Proudie, dead.
Crawley, I am glad to have found you.
Oh, I'm not often out of the parish.
No, indeed. But you might, for instance, have been down at Hoggle End with the brickmakers.
I was there yesterday.
Well, that was my point. Mr. Crawley, I am come from Dr. Tempest, on his behalf and mine, to ask you to reconsider. About giving up the curacy, I mean.
No.
We feel that you may have been in a little too much of a hurry in making up your mind. You should not be giving up your duties, and Mr. Thumble should not be taking them on.
Mr. Robarts, I did not choose my own successor.
Of course not.
If I had been able to do so, I would not, I think, have favoured Mr. Thumble. He is the bishop's choice, however, and I shall not interfere with that.
He was Mrs. Proudie's choice, not the bishop's.
But he comes by his lordship's authority.
Mr. Crawley, please listen. Ever since this unfortunate affair of the cheque became known, Mrs. Proudie was anxious to expel you from the parish. She was an aggressive, violent woman, and she chose violent means by which to get her way. Mr. Thumble's coming here is not right. It is not proper or just. And you may be sure that the bishop does not wish it.
Then let the bishop send some other clergyman.
But Mr. Crawley, we do not want him to send anyone. Crawley, at heart, you must be keen to stay here, if for no other reason than the income it brings you. You must be anxious for your family.
I am, yes.
Then think again about resigning. Give us time to discover if perhaps the bishop himself might think again, now that his wife is gone, and alter the decision that she forced upon him.
I am, it's true, anxious for my family. Grievously so, but in so momentous a matter as this, there can only be a consideration of right and wrong. Nothing else is of consequence. Whether through my own fault or not, circumstances have rendered me unfit to remain here as guardian of the souls of my parishioners. What therefore can I do? I cannot put my family before my responsibility to the church.
I would. I'm certain.
No, Mr. Robarts, you would not believe me. You would not do injury to the souls of others, and nor shall I.
Your mother informs me that everything must be sold up.
Well, Mrs. Broughton, you would hardly choose to remain here.
I hope she will let me have my own things. Things that were mine, I mean, before I met Dobbs. From what Conway can tell, my husband didn't owe a great deal of money. He wasn't ruined at all. But your mother was putting her support behind Musselburgh, and Dobbs was losing out to him, and that's why he shot himself. But there was more to it than that.
Was there, Mrs. Broughton?
Dearest Clara, for some time now, Conway Dalrymple has had a great attachment to me. I could not be blind to it, nor, I fear, could my husband. And I decided that it must be stopped quickly, and that the only cure for it was marriage to a girl whom Conway could respect. And so, dear Clara, I brought you and Conway together. For I am one of those unfortunate people, it seems, who do well for their friends, but who can never do well for themselves. The painting was the device by which to achieve my end. But though in one way I gained success, I very much fear that Dobbs may have misunderstood what I was doing, may have suspected precisely what I intended to avoid. That is Conway, perhaps. Does he know you are here?
I sent him a note.
Ah. You will marry him, I suppose?
Yes, if he asks me.
He'll ask you. Well, think kindly of me, Clara.
Yes.
Do not forget me.
No, I promise.
And be happier in your life, my dear, than poor Maria Broughton has ever been in hers.
Mr. Thumble, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Crawley. I'm in good time for the service, I think.
You have just 10 minutes.
Oh, very well.
You've shown wisdom in your choice of conveyance this morning. A gig suits you better, I think.
I hired it from the Dragon of Wantley.
Indeed.
Of course, I shall send the bill to the bishop and see what he makes of it. But what the bishop makes of anything these days, I am not at all clear. He has positively declined to see me on 3 separate occasions.
He's had a great shock.
Yes, and so have I, Mr. Crawley. I do not find that matters are at all smoothly run now that the bishop's poor dear wife has gone to glory. No monies for my work here, no travelling expenses.
Forgive me, Mr. Thumble, but it is now a week since I gave up my duties. I'm not aware in that time...